Roll 2d6. Episode 20. Welcome to Roll 2d6. With Adam and Nate. A podcast about games, gaming, and gamers.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Nate.
And we've just beamed back from Starfleet headquarters so that we can talk about Star Trek tactical starship combat games.
Well, he beamed back. I took the shuttlecraft. I don't need my atoms getting shot through space by that infernal contraption.
Oh, well, this Adam loves getting shot through space. At any rate.
Fascinating.
Thank you, Spock. At any rate, Nate and I really enjoy tactical starship combat games.
Oh, boy.
And we're both big Star Trek fans, so we have really been playing these games for years and years. If you're listening to this now, and I'll bet that you are, get ready to really geek out about Star Trek and about gaming for the next hour or so.
You know, I can't wait.
This will be...
Does that not sound exciting enough? Hold on.
No, that's fine.
I can't wait!
All right, well, you won't have to wait much longer. This is going to be one part of a multi-episode arc that's going to cover four of our favorite Star Trek-based tactical starship combat games. The four games, in no particular order, are Babylon 5 Wars, now sadly out of print. That was made by Agents of Gaming, which has been modified into a Star Trek game by some clever gamers.
Yes, it's a mod.
It's a mod to an existing game. The next one is the FASA game, Star Trek Starship Tactical Combat Simulator. Next on the list is the recently released Federation Commander by Amarillo Design Bureau. And lastly will be one game that isn't quite like any of these, the collectible disc game Star Trek Red Alert, which was published by Last Unicorn Games, but which is now out of print.
You know, it's kind of sad and maybe shows our age a little bit that three of the four games that we're talking about are, well, out of print.
It is kind of sad. Federation Commander, of course, being the only one still in print.
Yes.
There just aren't enough fans of us, enough of us fans of Star Trek-based tactical starship combat games, I suppose.
I guess.
But anyway, maybe this episode will bring some more into the fold. So in this episode, we will discuss Babylon 5 Wars. And finally, after all this, we'll do a compare and contrast episode where we talk about the differences and similarities between all these games. So today, we're going to talk about Babylon 5 Wars and how we play it as a Star Trek game. If you were a geek in the mid-90s, you probably heard about the TV show Babylon 5, created by J. Michael Straczynski. It ran for 5 years, from 93 to 98. That's actually 6 years, now that I think about it, but there was a movie in the first year, and then they had the real series.
Right.
Straczynski created a whole 5-year story arc for the show, and he had created a big, fully formed and fleshed-out universe with, you know, really long history, lots of alien races, and lots of types of ships. And I loved it when it was on. The whole thing is now available on DVD, so go watch it. I'm not going to go into this whole show because there are endless websites out there, almost as many as for Star Trek, which you can read about if you want to learn more about it. And I think there's even a couple of podcasts dedicated to Babylon 5.
Yes.
So Babylon 5 Wars was the war game licensed from this. It's a tactical starship combat game that was created in order to play out space battles from the show. It was created by Bruce Graw, who's one of the creators of Starfleet Battles. And they created it to reflect the flavor of space combat as seen on the show. So what is space combat like in the Babylon 5 universe? In Babylon 5 Wars, battles usually have both capital ships and fighters. Large capital ships usually carry their own fighters for protection. Now, when you think of fighters and capital ships, you usually think, at least I do, of Star Wars, in which the fighters are usually way too small to have any effect on a capital ship. You know, you think of an X-Wing attacking a Star Destroyer.
Right.
In the Babylon 5 universe, however, capital ships are not usually this large, and there are a couple of times on the show in which you see a few flights of fighters being a serious challenge to a single undefended capital ship. So capital ships in Babylon 5 would usually carry their own fighters, which they could use to defend against enemy fighters. In B5 Wars, capital ships are each on their own counter on the map, and fighters are usually handled in flights of 6 fighters each, which then move and attack as a unit. And this grouping of the fighters then makes it really easy to control lots and lots of flights of fighters.
Another big difference between this and the Star Trek universe is that the shields are non-existent for all but the most advanced races, and even if they do exist, they don't absorb damage like Star Trek-type shields do. At best, they give a ship a small penalty to be hit by deflecting shots away from the ship through electromagnetic or gravitic forces.
Yeah, shields in Babylon 5 are a really, really advanced technology, and most of the races cannot do that.
Right. I like to think of them as soft shields. They're not there to actually stop damage. They just sort of deflect them away.
Yep. And they don't even do that very well.
No, they do that very poorly. Fighters generally have light weapons that don't do a whole lot of damage to ships, but there are some anti-ship fighters, as well as some anti-fighter interceptor-type fighters. But standard fighters, their sweet spot is when they're attacking other fighters.
That's right.
One of the interesting game mechanics in the Babylon 5 Wars universe is the capital ships have an electronic warfare, or what we call an EW rating. It's the strength of their sensors and their jamming suites. This EW can be used to give a ship a bonus to hit another ship, or it can be used to protect itself, trying to jam the sensors of enemy ships. And each turn, each capital ship allocates some of its EW to offense, and you can allocate some of your EW to anti-fighter actions, which is called close combat EW. When you allocate for close combat EW, you wait until after movement to assign those points to be offensive EW against certain flights of fighters within a short distance. However, the amount of close combat EW each ship has is publicly known before movement, so the fighters can plan to just go attack another ship if they see too much close combat EW, and then you've wasted those points.
Yeah, I mean, it's a waste because you don't get to use them, but you could say you didn't waste them because you stopped fighters from attacking you that
right,
turn.
Right, you did area denial of the fighters. Exactly. You kept them away.
But yeah, that EW mechanic is interesting. Each ship can choose whether they want to go on offense or defense.
And my favorite part about that mechanic is that the EW ratings are public. Everybody knows where they are, and they are allocated and made public before movement, before fire or anything. So you can see who's painting whom and who is turtling up and who is going to do the alpha strike with all their best sensors on a single ship. It sort of telegraphs intent, and so because of that, you can also use it instead of just telegraphing intent, you can use it for misinformation. So
it's a really
sort of rich mechanic, and I really like that.
Oh yeah, you can put all your EW on someone and they now think you're going to attack them and maybe they go run away.
Maybe. I'd never do that.
Never. You bluff.
Me bluff? Never.
Another interesting mechanic that I like quite a bit in this game, but I think Nate thinks it adds needless complexity to the game.
It does.
Is that there are several different types or classes of weapons, and there are also several different types of damage that can be assigned. So to be brief, and I could be as complex as I want here, but I'll try to be brief. Each ship has a control sheet, just like in Starfleet Battles, that shows all the various systems of the ship. Your weapons, your engines, your shields, your hull sections, and whatever other technologies the ship has. And then it also shows you where each component is located on the ship, of course. Large capital ships generally have a heavily armored primary section, which is in the center, and then four other sections around it, fore, aft, port, and starboard, which usually have a little less armor. And most of your weapons and other systems will be mounted on one of these side or front or back sections. Each individual component has its own damage points and armor ratings. So as I was saying, there are different kinds of weapons that can inflict different kinds of damage. So for instance, there is standard damage, which when you attack someone, it affects a single component on the target ship. Then there's piercing damage, which represents usually a really big laser shot that goes all the way through the ship you're firing at. It damages the side that you hit, it damages the center primary section, and then it damages the other side.
Those are usually really big shots.
Those are the really big shots, yes. And we do see this happen on the show. It's kind of cool when you see a big capital ship fire a laser and just goes right through a target.
Excellent.
There's also raking damage, which is where you roll your damage and then you break it up into smaller chunks and apply it over and over again to various components on the side that was hit. Keep rolling a hit location over and over again. This is simulating a big weapon raking across the hull. So you think of that one scene in Star Trek II where Khan rakes his phaser across the side of the Enterprise.
Oh, yeah. It was a great scene. And you can reenact it with this sort of damage system.
I was waiting for you to give me your Scotty impression.
Oh, he stayed at his post.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
So it's so predictable. Dang it.
So there's lots of different ways to apply the damage in this game. And there's different, so that's damage application. There's different types of weapons also, such as particle, laser, gravitic, antimatter, matter, plasma, and others.
And others. That's just the beginning.
There's only like three others.
Well, still.
And each of them has their own method of applying damage. So for instance, some of them have their own method of applying damage, I should say. For instance, plasma hits always ignore half of the armor on the component they hit. But then again, they have a penalty. They take a damage penalty the farther of your range to the target. Then there's matter weapons, which ignore all armor, but they can't penetrate past the first component they hit. You just waste all the extra damage. And then there's antimatter weapons, which do more damage based on how well you make your two-hit roll. So, you know, it's a little extra flavor.
It becomes a very sort of complex chart of what sort of weapon am I firing against, what sort of target, and what sort of damage does this particular weapon do.
Now,
and it's sort of like an N squared problem in a way.
Well, now that being said, in any given battle, it's usually one race versus one other race.
True.
And each race tends to use all weapons of the same type, or maybe two types. So mm-hmm. that ends up being, you know, in a battle where I'm doing the Centauri and you're doing the Narns or something like that, there might end up being six or seven total different types of weapons in the entire game spread across all the ships. And so it's not as complicated as it sounds.
And it's even more simplified once we move it into the Star Trek universe because, well, phasers are phasers, torpedoes are torpedoes, and...
Disruptors are disruptors.
And so you have essentially the same problem, but a smaller set of possible weapons to go from.
Yep. Let's see. In Straight Babylon 5 Wars, another thing that reflects the TV show is that shots that are being fired at you can be intercepted. Each turn, when you're choosing your fire allocation, you can apply your weapons to fire either offensively or defensively. And then you can try to shoot down your opponent's incoming shots. And this was seen all the time on the show. You often saw the station bring out their interceptors when they thought they were about to get into battle. In fact, the one special thing that Earth ships have in this game that other races don't have is purpose-built interceptors that work very well at shooting down incoming fire. But can't really be used offensively very well. The other races generally make do with using their light anti-fighter weapons as interceptors. And then you can't shoot down laser class weapons. That's their special ability. But pretty much anything else can be shot down.
Right, because in the show, things that moved as fast as light, like lasers, could not be intercepted. But all the other weapon types were slower than light,
mm-hmm.
So they weren't throwing near instantaneous light weapons at each other, and that's why they could have interceptors for incoming fire.
Why doesn't everyone just use lasers? Well, I think they just use too much power. They're not very often seen in the game.
Or in the show,
yeah. So what the effect of having all these different types of weapons and types of damage allocation is that each race's weapons and ships could act differently. It gives a lot of individual flavor to playing each race.
Right.
Now, Nate, you and I have played the Straight Babylon 5 Wars a number of times. I don't want to say what that number is, but...
Greater than two.
I don't know what that number is. But the thing that we really didn't like about the Straight Babylon 5 Wars rules was the movement system.
Yes.
Now, it uses what I now recognize, I didn't know at the time, something I now know is something similar to what Starfleet Battle's movement system uses. And that is that if your ship is going a certain speed, say I have a speed of 5 hexes per turn or something, you have a turn mode, which is the number of hexes you have to go straight ahead after you turn before you can make another direction change.
Right.
So if I have a turn mode of 3, then I have to go straight 3 hexes before I can turn again. And this is meant to simulate inertia in the sense that the faster your ship is going, the longer you take to turn around. The faster you're going, the higher your turn mode. So you can't just stop on a dime unless you're going really slow. And you can't spin on a dime, I mean.
Right.
You only have so much delta V, and you can't change your velocity that fast.
Mm-hmm.
So when Babylon 5 Wars first came out, we played this a couple times. We didn't really like it. And then I found on the internet that someone had made a vector-based movement system. And we tried that, and we've really been using that ever since. It completely replaces the original movement system and makes each ship use real physics.
I can hear those distinctively.
Use real physics to change your direction. And the upshot of this is that when you use this vector movement system, capital ships become big lumbering beasts that don't turn around or change their speed very fast. And fighters become quick, nimble wasps that can pretty much turn and move to place themselves wherever they want to be. good.
And I think it's a great addition to the system. I mean, I it took me a game or two to get used to the vector movement system, but I'm glad we replaced it. I like the fact that it feels like physics. I like the fact that it takes me as long to slow down as it does to accelerate.
Yeah.
And to me, that actually fits a lot of the show, because the show, Babylon 5 Wars, or Babylon 5, used, for the most part, real physics. When they had a ship that had to turn around, they had to spin that sucker and fire the thrusters in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And using the vector system accomplished that in a way that I never felt that the regular turn mode system really captured. Mm-hmm. To me, the turn mode system was still just more or less like flying through air rather than flying through space.
Yeah, and I think we also didn't like that you had to keep track of how much of your turn mode you had gone through each turn.
Right.
Like, oh, I've gone through two of my turn mode of three. I have to remember the next turn I have one more hex I have to go straight before I can turn again. And
Then once you accelerate or decelerate, your turn mode changes, so you have to... It seemed like a couple extra columns of accounting that I wasn't interested in doing for the game.
Yeah, and Babylon 5 Wars has enough columns of accounting.
Yes.
So anyway, here's a quick summary of the turn sequence in Babylon 5 Wars. Now, I'm leaving out a few things here, but I'll go through this fairly quickly. So first of all, you secretly determine at the start of the turn which systems you want to deactivate on every ship for extra power. Power is generally not an issue in straight Babylon 5 Wars, but there are times when you want to turn off certain systems to get a little extra power. There's some weapons, like, for instance, that do extra damage if you put double power into them.
Right.
So then everyone reveals all their power allocations simultaneously. So that's public knowledge at that point.
Yes.
Then the next thing is that each ship rolls for initiative on a D20, 20-sided die. This is going to determine the order that the ships move later in the turn. Now, the neat thing about this is that it's not just every ship rolls a 1 to 20. Smaller ships get a bonus on this roll, and the smaller your ship is, the bigger the bonus you get. Small fighters generally get a plus 12 or higher on this roll, even up to a plus 20 for the really tiny fighters. And capital ships generally get no bonus on this roll. I think the Minbari ships all get plus 1 just because they have good sensors. But the upshot is that because you move from the smallest roll to the largest, fighters always tend to always move after capital ships, but not always.
My favorite part, I'm going to put in a plug for the graphical inertial movement system here again. There were additional initiative bonuses for change of acceleration, actual speed. But there for changes of acceleration, there were additional initiative bonuses, and I thought that or penalties, and I thought that was great, because if you had a ship that wasn't accelerating or decelerating, it was really easy to track where they're going to be.
Yeah.
There's no way that they're going to get the initiative on you. But if somebody is, you know, essentially jinking around by changing their velocity, it's a lot harder for you to tell, and so they get the drop on you. It was a good little addition there with the inertial movement.
That's right.
But I think it reflects really well.
I had completely forgotten about that, so thank you for reminding me. The next step after initiative roll is EW. So you secretly determine the electronic warfare levels of each of your ships, and which includes deciding for each ship how much of its EW is going to be used for defense and how much for offense. And if you're using it for offense, which enemy ship that offense will be directed at. And you have to, if you have like 3 points of OEW, you have to say one on this ship and two on that ship, or all three on that one ship, whatever.
Right. You must paint your target with your sensors. You have to find out where they are.
And then you also secretly determine in the EW phase if you're launching missiles or other ballistic weapons at the enemy. Generally, missiles are the only ones we use. Then after that, everyone's secret EW allocations are revealed, as well as everyone's missile launches. And the reason missiles are done this early in the turn is because they are really slow in the game. They're not like a laser or even a particle cannon that goes pretty fast. They move relatively slowly, so you have much more time to see them coming.
Right.
Is the idea.
Yes.
And they can do a lot of damage. Fourth is, the next step is that all the ships now move in initiative order from the lowest to the highest roll. With the vector movement system, it's pretty easy to predict where capital ships will be in their movement, and really quite difficult to predict where fighters can be.
Almost impossible.
Nearly impossible. So capital ships, you know they're going to be, you know, within one, two hexes of where their vector is pointing. Fighters can really be anywhere. So then after all the ships move, then you have the fire determination phase. So both sides secretly determine which target every weapon on every ship is going to fire at. And or if those weapons are going to fire defensively, you put down a little D, and he is going to fire defensively. If you put all your weapons on defensive and no one fires at you, well, you know, tough luck. You were
all defensive. You were all ready to go, and it didn't work.
Yep, and the same thing if you put your weapons on offensive, but you end up needing to shoot down some incoming fire. So you need to properly guess for each ship if it will be a target, and even what direction your fire is going to come from. Right. Okay, after fire determination, then fire resolution. So everyone reveals all their fire that they secretly determine. And then you resolve the fire in four sub-steps. And that makes it sound really complicated when I go through this, but it really isn't.
Can we tell you what? We'll just say the fire is resolved in four sub-steps, that's it. So
the point is that fighters can get shot down before they attack a capital ship.
Right.
So fighters have to last all the way to the end of the fire phase. Anyway, so then after fire resolution, then is the end of turn segment, where usually not much happens. You check for critical hits. You can launch some additional fighters, things like that.
A lot of cleanup, bookkeeping, stuff like that happens on the seventh phase or seventh section.
So that's it. There's actually, now I said there's seven. There's actually, you know, something like 40 phases in the full turn sequence.
Yeah.
A lot of them are not used in every game, but I've combined some here, but that's sort of what you go through. And that would be one turn. And one turn, when you and I play, can be like an hour to an hour and a half.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's sort of a complex game. So, yeah, it takes about that long.
A full game might only be like five turns long.
And that depends on how many ships you're controlling.
It really
if you're
does.
Only controlling one ship apiece, it takes an hour to go one turn. But
that would be really
but
fast.
But we're often playing with four, six ships apiece, and so there's a lot of accounting to
do. Four, six ships plus four, six flights of fighters, and it adds up.
Exactly.
So you can already see that this game, going through what I've told you about, this game involves quite a few steps of simultaneous action selection, which is something I like.
Yes.
I like trying to figure out what the opponent's going to do, knowing they're thinking the same thing about me, and trying to fool them. There's a lot of steps to each turn, and, like I said, a moderate-sized fleet each turn can be an hour or more. So that's the basic Babylon 5 Wars. Not quite basic, because we've already replaced the movement system, but pretty close to the basic Babylon 5 Wars. And it's already a fun, but complicated game that I do enjoy playing. It's a good system, lets you play out a battle using capital ships and lots of fighters. So how do we make this game even better by making it into a Star Trek game?
I think just by turning it into a Star Trek game is the best thing you can do to make it better.
That's right. And so the answer comes from a guy named Tyrell Lore and his playtesters.
That sounds so science fiction-y, by the way.
His name is
Tyrell Lore from the Epsilon Eridani 66 system.
That's right. It does sound like that. But him and his playtesters over at a website called PlanetSide, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes. Several years ago, they came up with rules for Star Trek ships using the Babylon 5 Wars system and designed ship control sheets for dozens and dozens of Star Trek ships, everything ever seen in the show and a bunch not seen in the show.
Yes.
So after I found this site, we tried a few battles with this rule set and these ships, and we really liked it. We still kept the vector-based movement system, but we used everything else.
Yeah, so what's... So Star Trek combat in this system differs a little bit from the Babylon 5 Wars game. The rules are the same. You still have electronic warfare, EW, which represents your ship's sensors. Every ship now has Star Trek-type hard shields, which have their own hit points and can directly take damage. There are no large fleets of fighters, because in Star Trek, you generally don't ever see fighters. Although you can field flights of shuttlecraft if you want to. The main difference is that power becomes much more important, and mainly because you have to use it to reinforce and juggle your shields. In Star Trek, the ships are generally destroyed pretty fast once the shields go down. It's sort of like an egg or an eggshell. Once you punch through the shields, the ships don't have a lot of structure, and they just blow apart. I mean, we see this in Star Trek all the time.
Oh, yeah.
They'll spend a good 15 minutes of the battle just trying to wear the shields down, and as soon as the shields are gone, the ship is gone.
Yep.
So part of the game involves both trying to hit the weak point in your enemy's shields and trying to angle and reinforce your own shield so that the strongest ones are facing your enemies. The other part is trying to find the power to bring them all back up again.
Yeah, true enough.
Yes. You have deflector shield projectors that automatically reinforce each shield by a certain number of points, but that is never enough. You can, however, shut down other systems like weapons.
That's right.
And use that power and channel that through the deflector shields and sometimes through a plasma conduit in some unfortunate ensign somewhere. But you can use those to reinforce the shields and buy extra points. Usually, if you end up turning off a couple of weapons on the opposite side of your ship away from your enemy, you can transfer in enough points to make a difference. You can also transfer up to half the strength of adjacent shields to each other. The upshot of this is that if you're in a direct firefight, you can keep that shield at full strength for a couple of turns, but it's a lot easier to shoot down than it is to keep it up, and it will come down eventually.
Oh, yes. The shields are so much easier to shoot them down than to bring them back up.
That's right. As we learn, it is easier to destroy than to create.
Very true. So we've played pretty much only classic Trek battles from the original show era, yes. Which is where the ships seem to be balanced the best. We use the Constitution-class ship or the Klingon D7 battlecruisers.
Yeah, we found that the Next Generation ones are just a little, maybe they needed more playtesting, let's put it that way.
They start to get really powerful.
Yeah.
Anyway, the ships seem to be balanced the best in that era. The battles tend to feature phasers and disruptors and, of course, photon torpedoes. Unlike as seen in the show, however, you can attempt to shoot down photon torpedoes in this game, which is a little extra thing that we like doing. Mm-hmm. Photon torpedoes are antimatter weapons, and so according to the rules of the original game, they do more damage the better you do on your two-hit roll. So when I'm playing the Star Trek version of Babylon 5 Wars using the vector movement system,
yes,
what are the important decisions that we're agonizing over each round? Well, movement is an obvious one. The capital ships in Babylon 5 Wars are lumbering beasts, like I said. They don't turn fast. They don't move fast. The Star Trek ships, however, are relatively maneuverable. They have a pretty high thrust-to-weight ratio, I guess. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of thrust available, and even with the vector movement system, you can be a little less predictable. Still not like a fighter, but you have a little more thrust to play with. EW becomes an important decision, just like it is in the original game. Those early Federation and Klingon ships usually only have like 6 or even less EW, which makes it all the more important to allocate it effectively. Power and shield usage, of course, like Nate said, becomes very important. Not usually an agonizing decision, though. At least in the battles we've done, it's been pretty clear which shield needs to be reinforced and which other systems can be powered
right.
down.
You don't have to agonize over which one is or which one you're going to reinforce because, well, you know which one that is.
That's right. And, you know, if I was doing a battle, and we haven't done one where I was facing, you know, 5 guys coming from every side, that might be a more difficult decision.
Right.
Usually, I know which side you're on. I can turn the phasers off on the other side and use that power to reinforce the shield facing you.
Right.
Fire allocation sometimes can be a difficult decision. Photon torpedoes are ballistic weapons, like missiles, so they always fire at the start of the turn. So you're going to know, by the time you have to allocate fire, how many torpedoes are heading towards your ship, and thus how many weapons to fire at them defensively. But since you can also use your phasers to intercept other phasers and disruptors, sometimes it's not easy to decide whether to go on the offensive or to turtle up.
There are a lot of really... I mean, there's some good strategic decisions, tactical decisions to make regarding, well, am I going to spend my energy trying to weaken their shields and blow them apart, or am I going to be, you know, turtling up trying to deflect off for as long as I can? Mm-hmm. But like we said, it's easier to knock shields down than to build them up, and so sometimes it all depends, which is a mark of a good game to me, is that there isn't always the one thing you should always do game in order to win.
Exactly. Then you can. There's lots of valid strategies, and hey, it's been fun trying to find them all.
That's right. That's right. There is one thing that I'd like to ask you. Now,
sure.
As we've been going through this, writing up the notes and coming up with the idea for the podcast, we realized we're playing this game designed by the creator of Starfleet Battles.
That's right.
That's based on it in many ways.
That's true.
And
yep.
Then we've modified it to include Star Trek ships. Why don't we just play Starfleet Battles?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And I was wondering about that myself as I was writing this up. You know, the simple answer is probably a combination of inertia and fear of the unknown.
I have a good dose of fear of the unknown.
That's right. Well, in terms of inertia, you know, I already had Babylon 5 Wars. We already knew how to play it. You know, this was just, you know, putting some different ship sheets on there. I can download those from the internet, print them out. A couple new rules for the Star Trek-type shields. Everything else is just like Babylon 5 Wars, so we really didn't have to learn a whole new game.
Right.
Invest
lots of money in buying a whole new...
Oh, yeah, that's right. I had everything we needed.
Right.
In terms of fear of the unknown, well, you know, Starfleet Battles is the 800-pound gorilla in the room of Star Trek Tactical Starship Combat games.
Yes.
And as I've said before, I think back in episode 5 or something like that, we've both been aware of Starfleet battles throughout both of our whole gaming lives. But, you know, I have nothing against it. We've just simply never gotten around to playing it or ever even knew anyone who played it. And nowadays, at least when I discovered this Star Trek rule set for Babylon 5 Wars, I just saw Starfleet battles as something that was so complex that it would be too painful to get into at this point due to its legendary complexity and, you know, 25 years of errata and additions.
That's right. I remember seeing all of those in the hobby store thinking, if I were to get into this, it would be like a whole new world. I'd have to ditch everything I know and completely embrace this.
And some of that is I think perhaps my own failing, because I'm a completist and I would feel the need to get, you know, everything that has ever been published for this game.
Exactly. Even if it's out of date and has been corrected in a later supplement, right. You would have gotten the older.
I want to see why that rule got corrected. Let's play it with the old
rule. Number 14.5.3.2 was changed between 1987 and 1996.
But you know, about Starfleet battles, you know, it's okay that we're not playing it, because that leads us into a segue to the topic of what will probably be our next Star Trek podcast, which is Federation Commander.
Actually, I love this game, Federation Commander.
Yes, like I said, we've been interested in the idea of Starfleet battles. We were scared off by the complexity and history, but they have redesigned it. They've made it much more simple, redesigned all the ship sheets, they're really easy to read, turned it into a fast-moving and relatively simple game, and it's now called Federation Commander. And I say relatively simple because it is, you know, to be tell the truth, still very complex. But supposedly,
it's brought it down to the level of Babylon 5 Wars, which is a level of complexity far beyond what a lot of people are willing to play.
But it's
but
right,
it brought it
level
down
now.
To our level.
Yes, and supposedly, and you know, I've never played Starfleet Battles, so I don't know for sure, but supposedly they have simplified the game quite a bit. You know, in my mind, I have an analogy here between the original Car Wars and Car Wars 5th Edition.
Yes.
The basic mechanics are the same, but a lot of things have been streamlined and simplified. So that is the game that we'll be discussing next. I've played Federation Commander several times now, and I like it a lot, and there are many differences between it and Star Trek with the Babylon 5 Wars engine. So in the next episode that we talk about this, we'll do some compare and contrast.
That's great. I'm looking forward to that. One more thing about Federation Commander, and I don't want to sort of spoil our next podcast, but you remember how we said we didn't like the movement system of Babylon 5 Wars, the turn mode one?
That's right.
Well, that was a long time ago, and we only tried it a couple of times, and we found the vector movement system soon after, and we've been using that since then. But we've recently played Federation Commander, which uses this turn mode system, and I didn't find it nearly as unwieldy as I did back then.
I know. I was playing that, and I'm like, yeah, this isn't that hard. Why did we stop using this?
Yeah. So anyway, I think I'd be willing to try Babylon 5 Wars again with the actual movement rules.
Oh, wow.
Again.
let's try it.
And it will probably change our strategies a lot, because movement will be a little bit different, a little bit more nimble.
Oh, yeah. It should be very different. So anyway, that's about it for Babylon 5 Wars. It's a complex game, and I'm pretty sure we've glossed over a few things that purists will complain about. But hey, we like this game a lot. In fact, I have an itching to play it again now.
I think you just need a cream for that.
That's right, a little salve. That'll clear that right up.
Yeah, and if you've ever played this game, let us know what you think of it.
Yep, all right, well, see you next time. Well, thanks for listening to us talk about a game that really pumps our antimatter injectors. Do you have some thoughts to share with us? Well, if you do, feel free to leave us a comment on this podcast's entry on roll2d6.com or send us email at roll2d6@gmail.com.
We'd love to hear what you have to say, so drop by, say hello. If you like what you hear, tell your friends to listen to the show, leave a review of Roll2D6 on your favorite podcast review site, or maybe you can start a Roll2D6 apocalyptic mystery religion.
That's a minimum show of affection, I'd say.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. So we'll be back in 2D6 times N days. Lanier, get us the hell out of here.
Initiating getting the hell out of here maneuver.